This audiobook of Journey of Souls, of Michael Newton. Case Studies of Life Between Lives, from 1994. Introduction. You would know the hidden realm where all souls dwell. The journey's way lies through death's misty fell. Within this timeless passage a guiding light does dance, lost from conscious memory, but visible in trance. Amen. Are you afraid of death? Do you wonder what is going to happen to you after you die? Is it possible you have a spirit which came from somewhere else and will return there after your body dies, or is this just wishful thinking because you are afraid? It is a paradox that humans, alone of all creatures of the earth, must repress the fear of death in order to lead normal lives. Yet our biological instinct never lets us forget this ultimate danger to our being. As we grow older, the specter of death rises in our consciousness. Even religious people fear death is the end of personhood. Our greatest dread of death brings thoughts about the nothingness of death which will end all associations with family and friends. Dying makes all our earthly goals seem futile. If death were the end of everything about us, then life indeed would be meaningless. However, some power within us enables humans to conceive of a hereafter and to sense a connection to a higher power and even an eternal soul. If we do actually have a soul, then where does it go after death? Is there really some sort of heaven full of intelligent spirits outside our physical universe? What does it look like? What do we do when we get there? Is there a supreme being in charge of this paradise? These questions are as old as humankind itself and still remain a mystery to most of us. The true answers to the mystery of life after death remain locked behind a spiritual door for most people. This is because we have built in amnesia about our soul identity which, on a conscious level, aids in the merging of the soul and human brain. In the last few years the general public has heard about people who temporarily died and then came back to life to tell about seeing a long tunnel, bright lights, and even brief encounters with friendly spirits. But none of these accounts written in the many books on reincarnation has ever given us anything more than a glimpse of all there is to know about life after death. This book is an intimate journal about the spirit world. It provides a series of actual case histories which reveal in explicit detail what happens to us when life on earth is over. You will be taken beyond the spiritual tunnel and enter the spirit world itself to learn what transpires for souls before they finally return to earth in another life. I am a skeptic by nature, although it will not seem so from the contents of this book. As a counselor and hypnotherapist, I specialize in behavior modification for the treatment of psychological disorders. A large part of my work involves short-term cognitive restructuring with clients by helping them connect thoughts and emotions to promote healthy behavior. Together we elicit the meaning, function, and consequences of their beliefs because I take the premise that no mental problem is imaginary. In the early days of my practice, I resisted past life requests from people because of my orientation toward traditional therapy. While I use hypnosis and age regression techniques to determine the origins of disturbing memories and childhood trauma, I felt any attempt to reach a former life was unorthodox and non-clinical. My interest in reincarnation and metaphysics was only intellectual curiosity until I worked with a young man on pain management. This client complained of a lifetime of chronic pain on his right side. One of the tools of hypnotherapy to manage pain is directing the subject to make the pain worse so he or she can also learn to lessen the aching and thus acquire control. In one of our sessions involving pain intensification, this man used the imagery of being stabbed to recreate his torment. Searching for the origins of this image, I eventually uncovered his former life as a World War I soldier who was killed by a bayonet in France, and we were able to eliminate the pain altogether. With encouragement from my clients, I began to experiment with moving some of them further back in time before their last birth on Earth. Initially, I was concerned that a subject's integration of current needs, beliefs, and fears would create fantasies of recollection. However, it didn't take long before I realized our deep, deep-seated memories offer a set of past experiences which are too real and connected to be ignored. I came to appreciate just how therapeutically important the link is between the bodies and events of our former lives and who we are today. Then I stumbled onto a discovery of enormous proportions. I found it was possible to see into the spirit world through the mind's eye of a hypnotized subject who could report back to me of life between lives on Earth. The case that opened the door to the spirit world for me was a middle-aged woman who was an especially receptive hypnosis subject. She had been talking to me about her feelings of loneliness and isolation in that delicate stage when a subject has finished recalling their most recent past life. This unusual individual slipped into the highest state of altered consciousness almost by herself without realizing I had initiated an overly short command for this action. I suggested she go to the source of her loss of companionship. At the same moment, I inadvertently used one of the trigger words to spiritual recall. I also asked if she had a specific group of friends whom she missed. Suddenly, my client started to cry. When I directed her to tell me what was wrong, she blurted out, "I miss some friends in my group and that's why I get so lonely on Earth." I was confused and questioned her further about where this group of friends was actually located. "Here, in my permanent home," she answered simply, "and I'm looking at all of them right now." After finishing with this client and reviewing her tape recordings, I recognized that finding the spirit world involved an extension of past life regression. There are many books about past lives, but none I could find which told about our life as souls, or how to properly access the spiritual recollections of people. I decided to do the research myself, and with practice I acquired greater skill in entering the spirit world through my subjects. I also learned that finding their place in the spirit world was far more meaningful to people than recounting their former lives on Earth. How is it possible to reach the soul through hypnosis? Visualize the mind as having three concentric circles, each smaller than the last and within the other, separated only by layers of connected mind, consciousness. The first outer layer is represented by the conscious mind, which is our critical, analytic reasoning source. The second layer is the subconscious, where we initially go in hypnosis to tap into the storage area for all the memories that ever happened to us in this life and former lives. The third, the innermost core, is what we are now calling the superconscious mind. This level exposes the highest center of self, where we are an expression of a higher power. The superconscious houses our real identity, augmented by the subconscious, which contains the memories of the many alter egos assumed by us in our former human bodies. The superconscious may not be a level at all, but the soul itself. The superconscious mind represents our highest center of wisdom and perspective, and all my information about life after death comes from this source of intelligent energy. How valid is the use of hypnosis for uncovering truth? People in hypnosis are neither dreaming nor hallucinating. We don't dream in chronological sequences nor hallucinate in a directed trance state. When subjects are placed in trance, their brain waves slow from the beta wake state and continue to change vibration down past the meditative alpha stage into various levels within the theta range. Theta is hypnosis, not sleep. When we sleep, we go to the final delta state, where messages from the brain are dropped into the subconscious and vented through our dreams. In theta, however, the conscious mind is not unconscious, so we are able to receive as well as send messages with all memory channels open. Once in hypnosis, people report the pictures they see and dialogue they hear in their unconscious minds as literal observations. In response to questions, subjects cannot lie, but they may misinterpret something seen in their unconscious mind, just as we do in the conscious state. In hypnosis, people have trouble relating to anything they don't believe is the truth. Some critics of hypnosis believe a subject in trance will fabricate memories and bias their responses in order to adopt any theoretical framework suggested by the hypnotist. I find this generalization to be a false premise. In my work, I treat each case as if I were hearing the information for the first time. If a subject were somehow able to overcome hypnosis procedure and construct a deliberate fantasy about the spirit world, or free, associate from pre, set ideas about their afterlife, these responses would soon become inconsistent with my other case reports. I learned the value of careful cross-examination early in my work, and I found no evidence of anyone faking their spiritual experiences to please me. In fact, subjects in hypnosis are not hesitant in correcting my misinterpretations of their statements. As my case files grew, I discovered by trial and error to phrase questions about the spirit world in a proper sequence. Subjects in a superconscious state are not particularly motivated to volunteer information about the whole plan of soul life in the spirit world. One must have the right set of keys for specific doors. Eventually, I was able to perfect a reliable method of memory access to different parts of the spirit world by knowing which door to open at the right time during a session. As I gained confidence with each session, more people sensed I was comfortable with the hereafter and felt it was all right to speak to me about it. The clients in my cases represent some men and women who were very religious, while others had no particular spiritual beliefs at all. Most fall somewhere in between, with a mixed bag of personal philosophies about life. The astounding thing I found as I progressed with my research was that once subjects were regressed back into their soul state, they all displayed a remarkable consistency in responding to questions about the spirit world. People even used the same words and graphic descriptions in colloquial language when discussing their lives as souls. However, this homogeneity of experience by so many clients did not stop me from continually trying to verify statements between my subjects and corroborate specific functional activities of souls. There were some differences in narrative reporting between cases, but this was due more to the level of soul development than to variances in how each subject basically saw the spirit world. The research was painfully slow. But as the body of my cases grew, I finally had a working model of the eternal world where our souls live. I found thoughts about the spirit world involve universal truths among the souls of people living on Earth. It was these perceptions by so many different types of people which convinced me their statements were believable. I am not a religious person, but I found the place where we go after death to be one of order and direction. And I have come to appreciate that there is a grand design to life and afterlife. When I considered how to best present my findings, I determined the case study method would provide the most descriptive way in which the reader could evaluate client recall about the afterlife. Each case I have selected represents a direct dialogue between myself and a subject. The case testimonies are taken from tape recordings from my sessions. This book is not intended to be about my subjects' past lives, but rather a documentation of their experiences in the spirit world relating to those lives. For readers who may have trouble conceptualizing our souls as non-material objects, the case histories listed in the early chapters explain how souls appear and the way in which they function. Each case history is abbreviated to some extent because of space constraints and to give the reader an orderly arrangement of soul activity. The chapters are designed to show the normal progression of souls into and out of the spirit world, incorporated with other spiritual information. The travels of souls from the time of death to their next incarnation has come to me from a 10-year collection of clients. It surprised me at first, but I had people who remembered parts of their soul life more clearly after distant lifetimes than recent ones. Yet, for some reason, no one subject was able to recall the entire chronology of soul activities I have presented in this book. My clients remember certain aspects of their spiritual life quite vividly, while other experiences are hazy to them. As a result, even with these 29 cases, I found I could not give the reader the full range of information I have gathered about the spirit world. Thus, my chapters contain details from more cases than just the 29 listed. The reader may consider my questioning in certain cases to be rather demanding. In hypnosis, it is necessary to keep the subject on track. When working in the spiritual realm, The demands on a facilitator are higher than with past life recall. In trance, the average subject tends to let his or her soul, mind wander while watching interesting scenes unfold. My clients often want me to stop talking so they can detach from reporting what they see and just enjoy their past experiences as souls. I try to be gentle and not overly structured, but my sessions are usually single ones which run 3 hours in length and there is a lot to cover. People may come long distances to see me and not be able to return. I find it very rewarding to watch the look of wonder on a client's face when his or her session ends. For those of us who have had the opportunity to actually see our immortality, a new depth of self, understanding and empowerment emerges. Before awakening my subjects, I often implant appropriate post-suggestion memories. Having a conscious knowledge of their soul life in the spirit world and a history of physical existences on planets gives these people a stronger sense of direction and energy for life. Finally, I should say that what you are about to read may come as a shock to your preconceptions about death. The material presented here may go against your philosophical and religious beliefs. There will be those readers who will find support for their existing opinions. For others, the information offered in these cases will all appear to be subjective tales resembling a science fiction story. Whatever your persuasion, I hope you will reflect upon the implications for humanity if what my subjects have to say about life after death is accurate. Death and Departure. Case 1. S. Subject: Oh, my God. I'm not really dead, am I? I mean, my body is dead, I can see it below me, but I'm floating, I can look down and see my body lying flat in the hospital bed. Everyone around me thinks I'm dead, but I'm not. I want to shout, hey, I'm not really dead. This is so incredible, the nurses are pulling a sheet over my head, people I know are crying. I'm supposed to be dead, but I'm still alive. It's strange, because my body is absolutely dead while I'm moving around it from above. I'm alive. These are the words spoken by a man in deep hypnosis, reliving a death experience. His words come in short, excited bursts and are full of awe, as he sees and feels what it is like to be a spirit newly separated from a physical body. This man is my client and I have just assisted him in recreating a past life death scene while he lies back in a comfortable recliner chair. A little earlier, following my instructions during his trance induction, this subject was age, regressed in a return to childhood memories. His subconscious perceptions gradually coalesced as we worked together to reach his mother's womb. I then prepared him for a jump back into the mists of time by the visual use of protective shielding. When we completed this important step of mental conditioning, I moved my subject through an imaginary time tunnel to his last life on Earth. It was a short life because he had died suddenly from the influenza epidemic of 1918. As the initial shock of seeing himself die and feeling his soul floating out of his body begins to wear off a little, my client adjusts more readily to the visual images in his mind. Since a small part of the conscious, critical portion of his mind is still functioning, he realizes he is recreating a former experience. It takes a bit longer than usual since this subject is a younger soul and not so used to the cycles of birth, death, and rebirth as are many of my other clients. Yet, within a few moments he settles in and begins to respond with greater confidence to my questions. I quickly raise this subject's subconscious hypnotic level into the superconscious state. Now he is ready to talk to me about the spirit world, and I ask what is happening to him. S. Well, I'm rising up higher, still floating, looking back at my body. It's like watching a movie, only I'm in it. The doctor is comforting my wife and daughter. My wife is sobbing, subject twiggles with discomfort in his chair. I'm trying to reach into her mind, to tell her everything is all right with me. She is so overcome by grief I'm not getting through. I want her to know my suffering is gone, I'm free of my body, I don't need it anymore, that I will wait for her. I want her to know that, but she is not listening to me. Oh, I'm moving away now, and so, Guided by a series of commands, my client starts the process of moving further into the spirit world. It is a road many others have traveled in the security of my office. Typically, as memories in the superconscious state expand, subjects in hypnosis become more connected to the spiritual passageway. As the session moves forward, the subject's mental pictures are more easily translated into words. Short descriptive phrases lead to detailed explanations of what it is like to enter the spirit world. We have a great deal of documentation, including observations from medical personnel, which describes the out-of-body near-death experiences of people severely injured in accidents. These people were considered clinically dead before medical efforts brought them back from the other side. Souls are quite capable of leaving and returning to their host bodies, particularly in life-threatening situations when the body is dying. People tell of hovering over their bodies, especially in hospitals, watching doctors perform life-saving procedures on them. In time, these memories fade after they return to life. In the early stages of hypnosis regression into past lives, the descriptions of subjects mentally going through their past deaths do not contradict the reported statements of people who have actually died in this life for a few minutes. The difference between these two groups of people is that subjects in hypnosis are not remembering their experiences of temporary death. People in a deep trance state are capable of describing what life is like after permanent physical death. What are the similarities of afterlife recollection between people reporting on their out-of-body experiences as a result of a temporary physical trauma and a subject in hypnosis recalling death in a past life? Both find themselves floating around their bodies in a strange way, trying to touch solid objects which dematerialize in front of them. Both kinds of reporters say they are frustrated in their attempts to talk to living people who don't respond. Both state they feel a pulling sensation away from the place where they died and experience relaxation and curiosity rather than fear. All these people report a euphoric sense of freedom and brightness around them. Some of my subjects see brilliant whiteness totally surrounding them at the moment of death, while others observe the brightness is farther away from an area of darker space through which they are being pulled. This is often referred to as the tunnel effect, and has become well known with the public. My second case will take us further into the death experience than case one. The subject here is a man in his 60s describing to me the events of his death as a young woman called Sally, who was killed by Kiowa Indians in an attack on a wagon train in 1866. Although this case and the last one relate death experiences after their most immediate past lives, a particular death date in history has no special relevance because it is recent. I find no significant differences between ancient and modern times in terms of graphic spirit world recall, or the quality of lessons learned. I should also say the average subject in trance has an uncanny ability to zero in on the dates and geographic locations of many past lives. This is true even in earlier periods of human civilization, when national borders and place names were different than exist today. Former names, dates, and locations may not always be easily recalled in every past life, but descriptions about returning to the spirit world and life in that world are consistently vivid. The scene in Case 2 opens on the American Southern Plains right after an arrow has struck Sally in the neck at close range. I am always careful with death scenes involving violent trauma in past lives because the subconscious mind often still retains these experiences. The subject in this case came to me because of a lifetime of throat discomfort. Release therapy and deprogramming is usually required in these cases. In all past life recall, I use the time around death for quiet review and place the subject in observer status to soften pain and emotion. Case 2. Dr. Newton, are you in great pain from the arrow? Yes, the point has torn my throat, I'm dying, subject begins to whisper while holding his hands at the throat. I'm choking, blood pouring down, Will, husband, is holding me, the pain, terrible, I'm getting out now, it's over, anyway. Note, Souls often leave their human hosts moments before actual death when their bodies are in great pain. Who can blame them? Nevertheless, they do stay close by the dying body. After calming techniques, I raise this subject from the subconscious to the superconscious level for the transition to spiritual memories. Dr. Newton, all right, Sally, you have accepted being killed by these Indians. Will you please describe to me the exact sensation you feel at the time of death? S. Like a force of some kind pushing me up out of my body. Dr. Newton, pushing you out where? S. I'm ejected out the top of my head. Dr. Newton, and what was pushed out? S. Well, me. Dr. Newton, describe what me means. What does the thing that is you look like going out of the head of your body? S. Pause. Like a pinpoint of light, radiating. Dr. Newton, how do you radiate light? S. From my energy. I look sort of transparent white my soul, colon pause, I seem to grow a little, as I move around. Colon a, wispy, string, hanging. Dr. Newton, and what does the process of moving out of your body actually feel like to you? Colon well, it as if I shed my skin, peeling a banana. I just lose my body in one swoosh. Dr. Newton, and does this energy light stay the same after leaving your body? Dr. Newton, if your light expands, then what do you look like now? Dr. Newton, is the feeling unpleasant? Colon no no. It's wonderful to feel so free with no more pain, but, I am, disoriented, I didn't expect to die. Sadness is creeping into my client's voice and I want him to stay focused on his soul for a minute more, rather than what is taking place on the ground with his body. Dr. Newton, I understand, Sally. You are feeling a little displacement at the moment as a soul. This is normal in your situation for what you have just gone through. Listen and respond to my questions. You said you were floating. Are you able to move around freely right after death? S. It's strange. It's as if I'm suspended in air that isn't air. There are no limits, no gravity, I'm weightless. Dr. Newton, you mean it's sort of like being in a vacuum for you? S. Yes, nothing around me is a solid mass. There are no obstacles to bump into. I'm drifting. Dr. Newton, can you control your movements, where you are going? S. Yes, I can do some of that, but there is a pulling into a bright whiteness. It's so bright. S. Brighter, away from me, it's a little darker white, gray, in the direction of my body, starts to cry. Oh, my poor body, I'm not ready to leave yet. Subject pulls back in his chair as if he is resisting something. Dr. Newton, it's all right, Sally, I'm with you. I want you to relax and tell me if the force that took you out of your head at the moment of death is still pulling you away, and if you can stop it. S. Pause. When I was free of my body, the pulling lessened. Now, I feel a nudge, drawing me away from my body. I don't want to go yet, but something wants me to go soon. Dr. Newton, is the intensity of whiteness the same everywhere? Dr. Newton, I understand, Sally, but I suspect you are learning you have some element of control. How would you describe this thing that is pulling you? S. A. Kind of magnetic force, but I want to stay a little longer. Dr. Newton, can your soul resist this pulling sensation for as long as you want? S. There is a long pause while the subject appears to be carrying on an internal debate with himself in his former life as Sally. Yes, I can, if I really want to stay. Subject starts to cry. Oh, it's awful what those savages did to my body. There is blood all over my pretty blue dress. My husband Will is trying to hold me and still fight with our friends against the Kiowa. Note, I reinforce the imagery of a protective shield around this subject, which is so important as a foundation to calming procedures. Sally's soul is still hovering over her body after I move the scene forward in time to when the Indians are driven off by the wagon train rifles. Dr. Newton, Sally, What is your husband doing right after the attack? S. Oh, good, he isn't hurt, but, with sadness, he is holding my body, crying over me. There is nothing he can do for me, but he doesn't seem to realize that yet.